Welcome to the Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkling of woo-woo.
So, welcome to the show. And this is today's Monday, and this is going out on Mint Wave radio station. You can just ask Alexa or go to the website, karenrobertscoaching.com/mintwave-radio, to listen in to any of our shows live and see our schedule. If you're seeing this as a podcast, then again, same website, /podcast-network, to see not only mine, but other podcast hosts that are in our network. You can download the app for Apple and Android, and please feel free to subscribe to any that take your fancy, or follow or leave a comment. Now, today's episode is 124, and today we have Kendria Johnson, who is a teacher, an author, and a coach. And we're going to be talking about quietly quitting, how to avoid burnout. I'm your host, Karen Roberts, the owner of Mint Wave Radio Station and the Raising Vibrations Podcast Network. And we have an academy, Six Figures and Beyond Academy, for coaches to get their message heard and get more clients. So today's show, so welcome to the show, Kendria.
Thank you so much, Miss Karen. It's good to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
And would you like to share with the audience, first of all, a little bit of your background, who you are, where you're from, and what exactly you do?
Well, I've been a school teacher, as you've announced, for about 22 years now. This is my 23rd year. And it started out as a love affair, like all love affairs. I just fell in love with teaching. It fell into my lap. It wasn't something I really wanted to do. But when I started doing it, I couldn't get enough. I was so passionate about it. I would skip to work every day because teaching is a giving profession. We love to be able to pour knowledge into young minds. But I was teaching in the state of Texas, where I'm from. And the state of education in America is not the greatest, not the worst, but it's not the greatest. And it started to hit me around year 10 and 12 because I was in the inner city. I was teaching in the inner city. So inner city has its own set of problems that the suburbs just don't have. And all of those problems tend to come home with you. As a school teacher, they start to come home with you, start to affect your personal life and your sleep and your professional lives and in your personal life. And it hit me really hard year 11 and 12. Now, I didn't have the vocabulary of burnout. I didn't have that word. And I didn't have that. I didn't know what was happening to me. I just knew I was tired all the time. And I'm sure your listeners could probably relate to some of that. Just tired all the time. You go to work tired, come home tired, you go to sleep and you're still tired. And it was affecting my health, my mental health, and my mental strains were not, you know, they weren't evening out like they usually do. You know, you're supposed to, everybody would say, well, will you get summers off? But even in the summer, I was, you know, stressed, and I had anxiety about going back to school because it's just, it does a number on you to be able to have that effect on that many people, and you're not well. So year 12 is when it really, really hit me. And I was like, I have to do something different. It was a series of events, but the main one was I was in the hospital for 5 days with a stress related illness, and I had all these tubes hanging out of me, and people were, you know, pumping me full of antibiotics, and I'm like, all of that was stress related. Everything was stress related, and I was like, I got to do something different. Life is not supposed to be like that, especially if I'm a school teacher. I'm supposed to like what I do, and I'm starting to really hate it. I hate this, hating the school, hate the people I work with. And unfortunately, yes, my kids were, you know, they were getting some of that negativity that was coming off of me. And I knew that wasn't what I wanted. And that's not the legacy I wanted to leave. So I did something very drastic, as you know. I took a job overseas and I said, I'm going to teach somewhere else and see if I can get that passion back. I want to know if I can get back some of that love I used to have when I first started teaching. Can I get that back? And when I tell this story, they're like, oh, well, when you moved overseas, I moved into Abu Dhabi, which is right next to Dubai. So I'm like, oh, my God, oh, everything I heard about that, it must have been just great. Well, it was. The environment was great, but teaching was still the same. Kids are still kids all over the world. Parents are still parents all over the world. The stress and the paperwork still the same. And so I was having the exact same problems over here. Having the exact same anxiety, exact same nightmares, exact same, I don't want to go to work today. I'm just so tired again. And so that was when I realized that I needed to look inside of me and figure out where this was coming from. And after doing some really hard press, some real good self-improvement work, I went to see a professional psychiatrist. I had a psychologist friend at home over in the States that I spoke to once a week. And I went to see a person that could help me, just a friend, someone who had already been here, who could help me, who mentored me through this journey here in this new space. And doing those, going to those three people, doing those three things over 18 months, I started to see a change. I started to go inside of myself and figure out, now, what do I want? I know being a teacher is a job, but what do I want? And I found out just a few things about myself, that I was a people pleaser and that my value was starting to be attached to my job because I wanted to do well so people would like me. I wanted people to like me. So I wanted all my kids to like me. I wanted to do a good job so everybody would give me the pats on the back that I felt like I deserved. But when I got in touch with who I was and I got, you know, back to that girl that I used to be, then I realized that, yeah, I'm worth it on my own. My self-worth is so valuable that I can't put that on someone else, a job, a principal, a spouse, a friend. I can't put that on anyone else if I am the one that's deficient. I need to go back and fill up my own cup. And me being, you know, a writer and a teacher, I wrote it all down. I wrote all of my experiences down. I wrote my journey down and I put it in a journal. And that journal turned into a masterclass first, believe it or not. And during the pandemic, that turned into a book. And then that book turned into a workshop. And then that workshop turned into a lot of interviews with wonderful people like yourself. And now it's going to be translated into a TV show. So I've signed a deal to be on Roku pretty soon here in the next 6 months. So my journey has not been easy, but being who I am, I'm still a person that likes to give. So I like to be able to share that story with someone who is exactly where I was, because I had to become where I was looking for help. I couldn't find it. So I had to become the help that I needed. My book, I wrote that for someone who may be experiencing exactly where I was, and they didn't know how to either give up the fight or get another fight or find another school or do something for themselves. They didn't know how to do that. And navigating through this world of education and politics is very difficult because you do love what you do. You love your students. You love being a school teacher. But you don't feel like, you know, I don't deserve, you know, all of this paperwork that I'm doing. I don't deserve to work all these hours and I don't get paid for this. I can do something else. And I can say no. No is one of my favorite words in the English language now. It is a wonderful word. It's a complete sentence. You don't have to explain yourself. And that made all the difference. And people say, well, you know, I'm not like you. You know, you're strong and you can do it. Honey, sign up for my masterclass, sign up for my workshops, and I will teach you how to be just like me and get exactly what it is that you want from your career, exactly what you want from your life, and be the hero that you are for someone else. So that's just a little bit about me.
Love that. And, you know, just because we're in different countries and, and like you said, you know, the issue was you've gone to Abu Dhabi and it's taken yourself there so nothing's necessarily changed just because the environment might have changed. It might be really sunny and and speaking a different language maybe around you, but other than that
you just learn how to cry in a different place.
But you know, I hear it so much. My sister's ex-husband now, but he was a teacher and they moved out to Portugal. We were living in Portugal and it's the same story. So many people out there that go into teaching, like you said, they're natural givers. They want to do it to help the kid getting bogged down in the paperwork. Seems to be a common thread. No matter where you are, you want to do the thing. You want to help the kids, but you're being tied down with, you know, we have Ofsted over here and they're worried about their Ofsted reports and they've got to get to this level and that level. And it's so much pressure on the teachers. And interesting you say that, you know, so many people can look at you and go, well, hang on a minute, you've got the summer off. Because again, that would be the perception over here. You've got 6 weeks for summer off. What are you complaining about? But they don't have to deal with all that stuff. Do you think that was the issue? Rather, I mean, I know you mentioned about, you know, you still got to deal with the kids, you still got to deal with the parents. But for you, what was the biggest issue?
The biggest issue for me was that I felt like I was being used, but I didn't have a word for that then. I was being used because you're a giver. Any teacher out there that's listening to me, they already know what I'm saying. The more you give, the more they want you to give. the more you do, the more they put on you to do. But then there's teachers that you work with next door that don't do as much as you do, and they go home every day to their families. And you're like, well, why can't I be like that? And I write in the book about, you know, a certain teacher that did that. He had his schedule the way he wanted. He had arranged it with the principal, and he went home every day at 4 o'clock. Well, we were there till 5:30. And I was like, that's not fair. And then I asked him one night, well, how do you get to leave at 4? He said, it's in his contract. I have a family. My wife, dinner's at 6. I have to be home. I got a 45-minute drive. I have to be home by 6 o'clock. It's not negotiable to my time with my family. And I was like, wow. Now, if he could do that, why can't I do that? And so I just do those things now. Now, does every principal that I work with like it? No, but it's not their life. It's not their life. It's mine. And so it's my time. And it's the values that you have. It's your priorities. And if you don't have values in place, good ones, for yourself, if you can't name the first three values that come to your mind right now in the first 3 seconds, mine are time, my family, and money. Those are my things, my values right now, right? If you can't name them, people will impose their values on you. They will say things to you like, well, Karen, you don't have any children. So, you know, you can be here. I know you don't mind coming in on Saturday and working all these hours for free, right? No. No is a complete no. It's not. I'm not doing that. I value my time, and my Saturdays are for me. You need to find someone else to do that, especially if you're not going to pay me. You have a great day. No, thank you, please, and thank you. And if you don't have that in place, then they will get you. And that's how they got me. And that's how they get millions of teachers all over the world to buy into that. You have to work harder to do this job and kill yourself to do this job in order to be a good teacher. Love that word. Good teacher. That's the reason why my book is named Teacher of the Year. Oh my gosh. The things you have to do to be the premier teacher, basically have no life and be at the school when it opens and when it closes. Not me. And I'm an excellent teacher. I'm exceptional at what I do.
And you're going to do a lot better and be more productive and everything because you have. So it really sounds like it's all about setting your boundaries from the get-go and valuing your own self-worth. And do you think that it's the individual schools that are putting so much pressure on you?
Absolutely. And it's a climate. Every school has its own climate. Every school has its own system. But most of it trickles down from the top. But there's a different way of teaching. Education is supposed to be changing. I mean, since the pandemic, it's definitely changed. It's supposed to be changing. But some of these systems that are in place haven't changed in years. And they still treat teachers the exact same way they treated them 50 years ago, when it doesn't have to be as hard as it was back then. It doesn't have to be, you know, rows and columns and everybody comes in and does the same thing every single day. They have group settings now. They have collaborative. They have flipped classrooms. They have all kinds of things now that make our job easier. But the systems in place say, no. You got to be here with these kids and do everything we tell you to do and check off all these boxes and get all these forms filled out in order to be in. Good teacher, an excellent teacher, because you know it's going to affect your evaluation. I haven't read an evaluation in 10 years. I could care less what they write about me, because I know I'm good. And I know I come in here and I make a difference. My children are my evaluation, not what they put on a piece of paper. And those are the things that I teach in my workshops, is that they can't ride you if you don't bend over. If they can't, and if you go into that interview, and I work with another coach that does career coaching. And I said, and she does this with us and with my group when we have a workshop. If you go into the interview telling them what your values are, you can have the power to get up and walk out and say, yo, well, that doesn't sound. You work till 6 o'clock every day and I have to have my phone on all the time in order to receive phone calls. That doesn't seem like that aligns with my values. But thank you so much for this interview. You can be in control of that environment that you create. But sometimes teachers are like, I'll just take whatever I can get. I don't care where they put me. Just let me work. I just love teaching. And then you get in those schools and it's like, what was I thinking? How did I get here? 5 years go by and they hate what they do. They hate where they work, they hate the students that they're working with. And they don't speak up and they don't go to the boss and say, you know, I really would like to go back to math if that's okay with you. And it's amazing to me how something very simple can make the difference in your day. I've helped so many teachers get the courage to just go up and ask for what they want. And don't necessarily give ultimatums, but just say things like, well, I mean, if you don't need another math teacher, I'll just go find somewhere else to go to where I can teach math.
But that is, I mean, you've got to be confident in yourself. And possibly many, they're coming from a fear mindset that they don't want to lose their job. So they will just do anything in the beginning, maybe, until the novelty is worn off. And it has had an effect. But it's going to have an effect on, of course, it's going to have an effect on your work life. And it's not just teachers. There's so many people out there in jobs where they're being taken advantage of. And they fit, I suppose it is, their perception at the end of the day, but maybe it does affect their careers. How have you found sort of resistance since you've changed your mindset, or have you found that actually they respond to it quite well because you have laid your boundaries out?
When you're in the situation, it's a very good question. When you're in the situation, like that situation I was in the States, I had to get out. Because I can't change that system. I can't change the principal. I can't change the people I work with. So I'm going to change my environment. So I changed my entire environment. But when I found myself, you know, having the same issues again, I knew it was me. So the first thing I did was I started to prioritize again what I wanted. I put my priorities in place. It's very important for me to not take phone calls and not have people bother me on the weekend or to do everything at work, leave work at work. Stop taking all that stuff home. I was doing that for years and did it when I was here. When I teach teachers this and I find out what the issues really are, mostly it's about they don't want to speak up. And it's that fear factor you just spoke about. Now, you and I know that there are millions of vacancies for teachers all over the world, everywhere. And yet they still are afraid to, quote unquote, lose their job or make somebody upset. So when the first time that I upset a teacher, or I'm sorry, upset a principal when they wanted me to work on a Saturday for free. And this is in Abu Dhabi of all places. This is not unheard of where I live. In this part of the world, people don't do that. But she wanted me to do a workshop with the students and the parents about science and do a science experiment. I said, that's great, but how much do I get paid for that? And there was no pay for that. Well, I won't be able to do that. Well, we asked you because you don't have any children. You're single. That's too bad. The answer is no. Absolutely, fundamentally, in every way I can give it to you, la. Is no in Arabic.
Love that.
So love that. And that's the first time I made her mad. And I was like, but she was like, oh, okay. Guess what? She never asked me for anything else. I was transferred to another school. At this new school, I set the rules immediately. I still don't do it. I'm not going to work on a Saturday. I don't like to have phone calls at night. Please tell those parents don't call me. I've gotten into it with some parents about it. And yet they respect my boundaries. They respect me. They didn't take their children out of my classroom. I didn't get transferred again. My principal respected it. She was like, no, teachers are allowed to have their personal time and their what I call office hours. I call them office hours. My phone is probably ringing right now on a Friday afternoon from someone at the job telling me to do something. It can wait.
You
can wait. Yeah. So those are the things that you have to have as absolutes in your mind. And you, unfortunately, I have to teach my people how to get their resumes together and keep their CVs on point. And I have to give them a complete list. Me and my other coaches give them a complete list of job openings every single week. Because if they do not adhere to they don't bend to the will of your request, it's okay. It's okay. It's their system. You don't have to be a part of it. There's somewhere in the world that they need you. And they love to have you, and you can have autonomy at that job. I have complete autonomy. I get away with so much; it's not even funny. But that's because they need me. I teach English, math, and science. Anytime they need me, I go into anybody's classroom, and I can take over and teach anybody's class when someone is not there. And they need that; they like that about me. But it comes with, I'm not doing that, and I'm not doing that, and I won't be doing that at all. I'm the veteran teacher. Get the new teachers to do that. I'm not doing that. Thank you, though. Thank you for thinking of me. Thank you for thinking of me. But no.
Brilliant. So that's really, you know your worth and you're standing in your power. And yes, if it's not a fit, then love it. Just say no. Yeah. But I wish more were brave enough. So what for you, like you said, so before you weren't like that for many, many years. For you, what was the trigger that really made the change? How did you switch that really in your mindset and find that inner strength?
Well, some of it is, you know, because of the medical problems I was having, and I'm sacrificing all of my time, effort, and energy to work harder for children that don't even go home. They go home and watch television. I'm up until midnight doing lesson plans and PowerPoints. they're in the bed with their, you know, brothers and sisters playing video games. And so I'm like, why am I giving so much energy to people who don't give that energy back to me? That's silly. But why not do this? Why not schedule everything around, you know, certain office hours? Why not put some of that energy that I was putting into them into myself? You know, I love to travel. I love writing books, clearly. I love, you know, speaking on stages. I love having a microphone in my hand. I do that for, you know, myself. Those, literally, I do it for myself. People think that's a job. No, I love it. I love speaking. But I do things for myself that pour back into me. And then I have the energy to pour back into my students or my job or my spouse or my friends. Because one thing about it, Karen, is way you do one thing is the way you do everything. So what I was sacrificing for a job, for work, I was also doing that in my personal life. I was letting my friends run over me and just pile stuff on me. I was letting my significant other take me for granted because I wasn't, you know, standing up for myself. I wasn't in my right power. But now I've decided that I'm worth it. And my values are worth it. And my priority, and I don't have that much time left. I got more time behind me than I have in front of me. I'm not wasting time. It's currency. I'm not spending time on things that don't serve me. And if there ever a day that teaching does not serve me, then I have to go. It's something I need to do something else because that's not going to be beneficial to me. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And tell us about was this the first book that you wrote or have, I mean, obviously you're teaching English, maths and science. So yeah. Obviously English, how did you get into doing that? Was that something that you'd always wanted to do or was that just the circumstances that led up to that made you decide to get it down in a book?
Oh yeah. The math and science, I did write it down how I ended up being a math and science teacher. I remember my daughter was in fourth grade and I just started my teaching career and she came home and said she didn't like math. And I was like, don't you ever say that to me. I'm a teacher. Don't you ever say that again. Ever, 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 ever. You love math. Say it. You love math. I love math. But she didn't like math. So I did some research because I'm a teacher, you know, parents and teachers, boy. The kids of teachers, man. But I went to do some research and I put a flute in her hand and she started to take music. And music has something, is a correlation, something where in the brain it does something where it helps your math scores. Her math scores went out, they went off the charts after that. So fourth grade, she struggled. Fifth grade, she did not. Sixth grade, she definitely didn't. By the time she got to eighth grade, she was in honors classes for math. By the time she got to high school, she was taking calculus. By the time she got in and finished high school, she was taking college math. Then she graduated magna cum laude from Tuskegee University with two degrees from, you know, finance and accounting, and she works for NASA. So that was, math is my thing. If I could do that with my child, what could I do with someone else's child? And that's where the passion came from being a math teacher and a science teacher, because I wanted to instill that with the students that I had. Now, living here, the genders are separated. So I get, it's like, woo, I get to teach girls about math and science every day. I love that. I love that. So I put up with a little bit of things that I deal with over here. I put up with that in order to be able to teach girls math and science. So yes, that's where that passion first, you know, was, you know, instilled in me. And then I was good at math, but not as good as my daughter. She has surpassed me on that. I can't.
But it's obviously the way you teach it also. It's obviously the way you teach it. What is the difference between a good teacher and a bad teacher? You'd think that they have a process of teaching, but obviously not, because otherwise you wouldn't get the real varying degrees of I mean, I get it. Some teachers might not relate to certain children. There's lots of maybe a little bit more complex. However, what is it that sets you apart from the others?
Well, I, of course, a passion for what I do, but it's also that, you know, they don't rock me. They don't shatter me. They don't get to my goal. They used to be able to do that when I was, you know, stressed out all the time. The kids would say one thing and I'd be in tears all for the rest of the day. I was very sensitive back then. Now it's like they're children. I get the psychology of kids now. You know, as you teach and grow older, you almost grow up with them. And the psychology of children is every human being on the planet, including your children, me and you, want three things. They want to be loved, they want to be respected, and they want to be accepted. Once you get those three things down, you can teach anybody, because something might be missing. If they're misbehaving or they're cursing you out or throwing chairs at you, which has happened to me, then there's something missing from those three things, and maybe something is going on at home, even if there's mental capacities that are not there, there's still something missing. They all want the same thing. Even the children that curse you out, even the kids that are really misbehaving, even the kids that lie on us and say all kinds of things. And I didn't have that when I first, no one taught me that when I was first coming up in the teaching profession. So again, I do that now in my workshops. I love getting my hands on new teachers so I can show them that and tell them that. Don't take that stuff personally. And to answer the rest of that question, don't take it home. Don't take it home. Keep it at school. Even if it hurts you to your core, don't take it home and don't take it personally, because you have to be full in order to teach those kids. And let's just say you can't get all of them. You just can't reach all of them. That's okay. Reach the ones you can. Do what you can do to reach the ones you can. Relationship is key to being a good teacher. So I hope that answers the core of your question, because I believe it's relationship.
Yeah. And again, going back to the mindset issues, going back to your own self-worth or how you perceived your own value. And you mentioned again, stress as well. And right at the beginning. And you know, this is a knock-on effect to everybody. You know, anybody I speak to, there's always comes back to the fact that stress has had an impact, because, you know, it doesn't just affect, like you said, it obviously affected you physically very badly to put you in hospital for 5 days. But I think so many, I mean, it's quite amazing, really, isn't it, that the teachers are under so much stress and it's not really being addressed, because it is having a knock-on effect to them, not just their how they're performing as a teacher, but to their health. You know, we're not designed to be in a stressful state for long periods of time. But I would say, I wouldn't even like to hazard a guess at the stats of how many teachers, you know, have got a little bit more cortisol running around in their body, which is not doing them any favors. Yeah. And again, down to you saying about it is this fear of being judged, or you know, not only by the kids themselves, but the teachers and the parents. It really is. Mindset is. Do you think that's the sort of number one thing with regards to this?
Yeah, because the world of teaching hasn't changed. I'm a unicorn. Now, the world of teaching hasn't changed. It's still very stressful at my job. It doesn't bother me. I go home every day, but the mindset has changed. And I wrote the book for that person that kept asking, those people, that teacher, those men, those women that keep asking me, how do you do it? You smile every day. How do you do it? You go on vacation every month. I said at one point I was going on vacation every month. And when I say vacation, I mean like a weekend to Dubai. Still, it was vacation. Vacation could be my balcony back here. I would say that, I was on vacation. And they were like, how do you go on vacation every other week? I said, because that's what I choose to do. So it is mindset shift. And me being a teacher, now that I got the formula, I teach other people. And it's a hard journey, though, because it's hard. It's almost like defecting. They have to deprogram themselves not to submit to all of that. You know, well, I have to do this and I have to do that. No one else will do it. I will do it. No, if you don't do it, find out what happens if you don't do it. Find out what happens if you don't call that parent back on a Saturday just because they called you. I will tell you, nothing will happen. They will be wait till Monday when you get back to work. Nothing's going to happen. And if you, I've had this conversation with a person in a workshop. It hurt my heart, but I had to tell her. I said, even if you do everything right, there's people that still won't like you. It doesn't matter. It won't matter one way or another. You have to like you. And I said, and if something happens to you, they will replace you in like a day. They will have a substitute you in that class in a day. And they might mourn you. They might not. They might send you flowers. They might not. And it hurt me to say that, but it was true. You think you're so valuable to them and you're putting all your worth into them, but they're not thinking about you the same way. Oh, she's Karen. She's a great teacher. We just love her. Because she does everything we tell her to do. And she answers the phone at midnight and everything. We just love her. But if something happens to Karen.
No.
What happened to Karen? She could be gone 3 weeks. She could be gone 3 weeks. And like, what happened to Karen?
What happened to her?
She died.
It's got to be a two-way street, right? It's got to be a two-way street.
Love
so it really is a case of,
yourself.
So nothing really had changed. Nothing had changed in school. Just your thought process, your reaction to it. So that, I think that's a massive lesson to anybody, not just teachers, anybody in a job, you know, that, you know, that it's out of their control, or that's how they see things. That's their that's their perception. But really what I'm hearing from you is it is in your control.
It is. You are the author. You are the author of your own life. I have the exact schedule I want. I have the autonomy that I want. I work in a place where, you know, everyone knows me. So they know what my boundaries are because I put them in place in front of them. Like, I'm not doing that. I'll stand up in a meeting. Yeah, that sounds great. That program sounds great, but I won't be doing that if there's no pay involved. They know this. So they won't ask me to do things that don't involve extra pay for extra time because my time is important to me. So one of the things that I love to do with teachers is to get them on the other side of, you're right. Nothing bad is going to happen to me if I say no. You're right. I could go somewhere else and work. You're right. At that interview, I asked them for what I wanted and I got it. And then the light bulb goes off is that it's not me, it's you. I had Tanya was a client of mine some years back, and she was a mentor of, I was her mentor, she was my mentee. Now, Tanya was an art teacher, okay? They hired her to do art, but as they do in these schools sometimes, they threw out the art class and put her in the English class. She didn't like it. So guess who had to hear it? Me, every day. And so every day I would say, go in and talk to the principal. And the principal, she would say, well, we need you in the English department. You don't mind, do you? And Tanya would just go and shake her head and put her head down and do exactly what she's supposed to do. But I told her, I said, at the end of this year, you need to go to the job fair. Go to the job fair. She is not listening, so go to the job fair. She went to the job fair. She put her education, her background in that resume. And she had 17 interviews because the job market is like, the teachers are needed. They need teachers everywhere. And if it's 100 people and she interviewed with 17, that was just the tip of the iceberg. She got 17 interviews, 10 people called her back, and she got to pick where she wanted to work. But here's the problem. She was my mentee, and she's working where she wants to work now. She's actually a principal. And the problem is, how many Tanyas are still in that English position? Hate the job, hate the school, hate the principal, hate teaching English. Hate the students. They, you know, they don't like that age group that they're teaching. No one has said to you, why don't you just go do something else? Or why don't you go to the principal and demand that you go and get what you want, or get ask for what you want? And they do that. And I get to be that voice that says, no, 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 no. If they don't appreciate you and they don't want what you have to the table, bring to the table, dine alone, find somewhere else, go get another table. I'm that voice. And so I get to be that that voice of change because there's not a lot of me's out there. There's coaches out there, but there's not a lot of me's out there.
No, and that's you're a very particular, you're a very specific niche there. And would really for you, would you have made those changes if you didn't have a coach?
If I would have made those changes sooner. I wouldn't have been in year 12. There's no way I would have been in year 12. And with the system with mentors and mentees that's set up in our system, they do have them. They do have coaches or quote unquote mentors in the system. They're only good for the new teachers. So what about us? Again, I'm looking around, finding someone. Okay, I've been in this for a decade. Now what about me? I'm not getting what I want. I'm unhappy. There was nowhere for me to go. Psychologists are great. And psychiatrists are great, but they don't understand the pressure and the balance and the imbalance that we have with, I want to help the world. I want to educate children, but I don't want to die of a heart attack and stroke doing it. So how do we help me? They're just going to give you pills. So again, my situation is, my whole program is I became the help for any educator out there. And I'm getting calls from superintendents and principals alike. I'm the help that they
are looking for. It's going to be the same.
Yeah.
And it's going to have a knock-on effect to their whole lives. Like you said, it's if that's going to have a knock-on effect to their family, spouse, other relationships with friends. So it really is a full service that you're providing there.
Yeah. I'm a much better friend, much better partner, much better mother, much better grandmother, everything that I wasn't before, all those things that I was missing out on because I wasn't fully present, I'm present now. And it's intentional. It's intentional. And you can have that too. Anybody who's listening to me, you can have that too. You don't have to be a teacher. You can have that too.
But it starts with looking after number one. Oh. And why do you think it's almost like, it's almost like a dirty word for some people. They think that, you know, well, that's just selfish. Well, yeah.
It is. It is. And what's wrong with that?
Exactly. Why is it a dirty word?
Yeah. What is it's, wrong it's, with being thinking of self first, getting up, washing yourself and putting water in yourself and praying for yourself and meditating on yourself? What is wrong with that? You're a better you. You're
exactly.
a better you.
Where does this come from? Where does this come from?
I think it's just an emotional programming, and it affects women more than it does men, even though I have male clients. It affects women more than it does men because we've been programmed to believe that we have to be good at everything. And we're not. I'm not. I will be the first to admit it. I suck at some things, but I'm great at other things. Yeah, I show up for great things, and then I'm sometimes late for dinner. Every once in a while, I'm late for dinner. If my friends are meeting me, I'm late because I got it. This takes a lot, and I'm, I got to be cute. But I am really good at, when I'm there, I'm the life of the party. So, but we are, as women, we've been taught that you have to be good at everything all the time. And that's where we miss it. And there are parents that are taking, Adderall right now because they're not good at everything all the time. And they want to put up appearances that they are. And I don't have
it's
to
just
be
too much, too much pressure. Too much pressure on themselves, and that's causing stress, which then they're not going to be as productive. They're not going to be as good at their job because, it makes so much sense.
Yeah, so, I deprogram perfectionist.
It's okay to admit, right? It is okay.
I'm not
None
perfect.
Of us are. Yeah. Again, why do people strive? Why do people strive for perfection? There's no such thing as perfection.
Yeah, I have a chapter in my first book, not this one, but my first book, where it says Barbie's dead, and he's getting on Ken's nerves. She's getting on Ken's nerves. She really is. Barbie's dead. The whole idea of it is dead. There's no perfect woman, and I write how perfection not only is it difficult to achieve, but just think of the stress and the pressure to maintain it. Who would want to live like that? Not me. Not me. There is solace. There's people, there's identity. There's people that can identify with you because you're so weak and because you have you're out front with your, I'm not great at this, 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 and this. I'm a great teacher. I'm a horrible listener, but I'm a really great teacher. If you just sit down and listen to me, it's great. But if I'm in the seat and I have to listen, I got somewhere to be. So just wrap this up in about 15 minutes. I'm a horrible listener. I'm a terrible student. Oh, I'm a terrible student, but I'm a great teacher. But I don't like to sit somewhere for an hour and listen to people talk. That just drives me up the wall. I have to go. But if you're honest about that, not only like you're laughing, my friends in my workshop laugh too. And they laugh at me, but that makes me more relatable. Like and trust factor. They trust me now because it's like, good. That's me too. Good. I'm glad you understand it. It's not always, roses. And so I try to do it. Yeah, I do. I own it.
I'm a terrible listener. And that's okay. We all do what we do, right? And we all have our strengths and we all have our weaknesses, and it's actually okay. You don't have to. Oh my goodness, it's just all it's all self-sabotage. Yeah. But it's being aware. So many teachers are just not aware of how much it's affecting them, or more importantly, if they can actually do anything about it. They're feeling stuck. They're feeling that there is nowhere. And that's possibly why, the numbers, why they do need so many teachers, because people must be leaving the industry in droves, especially after what's gone on in the last few years.
Yeah, after COVID, the whole educational system is switched. Now we know you don't have to have 5-hour meetings after school when you can have them on Zoom. You can have them on Zoom or MS Teams now, right? But they're still doing it. So now they're going back to the way that they were doing it before. And the teachers are like, I don't want to do that. Can we do something else? A lot of teachers, they call it the part of this section was quietly quitting. They were like, I don't want to do that anymore. I liked it a little bit before. There's certain things about the pandemic I don't want to go away. And one of them was meeting online. Let's do some of these training online and from my house, from the comfort of my home, instead of having me sit in these long, boring professional developments that don't teach me anything about being a better teacher. Nothing. And that's why people like my program, because they choose to come to me, and I don't talk about Bloom's taxonomy, anything about education. I talk about when's the last time you did something for yourself? When is the last time you wrote down your priorities and your value systems? When is the last time you actually focus on your beliefs? Do you journal? I go over that. We talk about meditation and why it's necessary in the minds of a teacher's mind, because we have our minds cluttered. Our minds are completely cluttered. My teachers are the worst. I know it's probably doctors and nurses out there saying, me too. But I just know as the mind of an educator is completely cluttered with things I have to do at work and all these things I have to do for work. And then I have my personal life. I got to do all that stuff for my personal life too. But as a teacher, I have a lesson plan in my head that I have to perform right now. Because teaching is like that. I got to pour all this knowledge that I got right here into all 28 of those babies when I get to work. And so if you don't meditate, those things get mushed together. And you're like, okay, now where did I put my glasses? Oh, they're on your face. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Where did I put my earrings? Oh, they're right there. You get so bogged down and your mind is completely cluttered. You have to learn how to say, I do it all the time, every single day of my life. When I'm going to teach those babies, before they come in, I do 3 minutes and I cut my mind music on and everything. And I close my eyes and breathe. And then I bring them in. Because if I don't do that, I'm already yelling when they come in. I told you to move that backpack. Move it before they even come in. Because I'm already frustrated before they walk in the door. So again, self-care is healthcare. Taking care of yourself is the best way to improve your health. But people don't see that. They're starting to. I won't say everybody in the world, but it's starting to start. The conversations are changing. But I want to be a part of the conversation that helps us keep qualified teachers in the classroom. I want to be a part of the conversation where people at the top understand that they need a wellness program for their teachers. You got it for kids. You do. They have mental programs for children. Great. I'm 40-something years old.
What about the teachers? Yeah.
But I need a hug every once in a while. I need a hug.
It still goes back to the way teaching is done, doesn't it? Because, again, we've been conditioned to believe that we've got to hold all this. We've got to use our mind, our conscious part of our mind, to learn, to plan, to remember. Mm-hmm. And we think we're in control, whereas we've got this innate operating system that is within us that knows what we need to do. So we're trying to frantically try to remember. That's why we've lost our phone and keys and everything. Yeah. It knows. But because we're chattering so much, we're not listening to that inner voice, which is why meditation is just so important. It's not even meditation. I say it's even the opposite to meditation sometimes, just being totally conscious, but zip it verbally and the chitter chatter, unthinking. Mm-hmm.
Training your mind.
For a moment. And then when you go and do, you're more productive. And I hope you're right that people are sort of coming round to that, because most people are just caught up here in that chitter chatter trying to keep it all together, and they're gonna fail.
They call me when they fail, but what I'm trying to do is get to them before they fail. That's why I love new teachers. They're my favorite. My new teachers are my favorite. People that have been in it less than 5 years, they're my favorite people, my favorite audience to talk to, because they haven't. They still have that wonderful bravado. And I was like, I'm coming to change the world. But they've never been called the B word by a child before. So just wait for it. And you've never been lied on by a five-year-old. You know, five-year-olds never lied on you. You tell, tell your mom, tell their mom about something that's not true about you. So wait for it. So when I get to them and I prepare them for that, they're better. If someone tells them you're going to get to a day, it's going to be very difficult for you. It's not always going to be roses, and your kids are not going to always be productive. And there are things that are happening on the outside of that classroom that you have no control over. And you have to speak to your kids. You have to get up and teach. You have to put on a brave face, and sometimes you have to address it. I worked in the inner city, gun violence, police brutality, death of drugs, promiscuity. I had to address some of those things because they were creeping into the classroom and the kids were distracted. There you go. I had to put on my super cape, a superhero, and I have to get in there and do it. And the teachers are like, but I don't think we'll have to deal with that. I said, just wait for it. It's coming. Just wait for it. I love it. But I love what I do. I love what I do in the daytime, and I love what I do at night with teachers.
But do you find, saying that you like working with the new teachers, however, do you not see that, like you, for instance, it took you to really be, in hospital for 5 days for you to come to that realization? Do you not find that some people, when they're new, they're just not going to see it because they've not experienced the negative yet, so they don't think they're going to have a problem?
Yeah, they don't think that. They're very idealistic. Not all of them. Some of them have there's some what they have this term these young people use called woke. So some of the teachers that are coming into the profession are quite woke. They are aware of the environment that they're teaching in. They choose to teach there. But there are some that just come from it. Always has to do with, I guess, your background. So if you come from a two-parent home where dad was always there and mom was always there, and you come into this inner city where there's no fathers in the home, or there's, half of the kids know where their dad is and half of them don't, and half of them don't even know where their mom's is, and some of them do and don't, then you can't relate. And so that's when they used to send me in. They would send me in as their mentor to help them be able to relate to their students, because relationships are key. Yes, you're there to teach science and math and English, but if the child doesn't trust you, they're going to disrespect you. And they're going to disrespect you regardless, because they want to test those waters. And I taught 6th, 7th, and 8th back in the States. And that's a really rough age group. It's a very rough age group. And our goal was to keep the new teachers. When they came to us and they sent us a busload of them, our goal was to keep them. So they would send me in there and just say, train them, and I tried to do my very best. And I was like, yeah, but they haven't experienced real, like lights being cut off, phone being cut off, being poor. They don't know what that's like when they're coming from the suburbs. So it was a rough challenge for me. But now as I've gotten older in my career.
But it's helped you. It's helped you now.
It's helped me become a better teacher. Yeah. And a better mentor. And who knew then that I was being trained to be the teacher coach that I am now? I didn't know that. I just thought they were sending me in there because I said the thing that nobody else wanted to say. But now I see that it's not just the new teachers. There's tons of teachers that call me and come to my workshops and ask me to be their coach that are pretending that they have it together. A lot of them don't like to be, they don't want me to even use their testimony or their real names, because they are pretending. They go to work every day and they've been teaching 20 years and they're pretending that they love it. They pretend that they have it together and they're struggling mentally. They're drowning in loneliness. They feel they don't feel heard.
I think that's a big thing. A lot of people, they're not necessarily fearful of failing in things. They're fearful of other people seeing them fail.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
So it is true.
Like you said, it's like they're putting on this act because it's the fear of that rather than, okay, it's not working. So with regards to mental health, are you talking about the mental health of the teachers and the kids, I suppose? So have you noticed a difference with the mental health of the kids from where you were teaching to where you are right now? Or is there still a...
There's more support at home for students who have issues. There's more support in the States I've seen. Here, there's a denial of mental health issues. Straight denial. Like, this child needs to be tested for something, but the parents don't believe in that because this is a different culture. It's a different religion. So they don't believe in things like that. So they don't want to admit that something's wrong with their baby and something's different about them. And that's not my job. I'm not here to save the world. I'm here to teach and do my job. But that's the issue, is whereas at home, I can refer them. Sometimes the parents have to be consulted. Sometimes they don't. And I can refer them and they can get the help. They can get that special needs allotment. They can get extra time on a test, or they can maybe they're dyslexic, and like anything, like something as simple as dyslexia, I just mentioned that, something as simple as that, they don't want to admit that their children are writing everything backwards. And
again, and fear of how people are going to be, it's just crazy.
But
it's not
here.
In the best interest of the child, but yeah, different. Yeah, we can't.
Very different here.
I can't change people's.
And I can't go to the parent and say anything. I can't. I personally cannot go to the parent and say anything. It has to be done by the social worker, and it is just complete walls. And it's not one child, it's a whole bunch of them. But I teach all of them the same and just pray for the best.
Right. You come across as very centered, very happy. What is your personal definition of happy?
Oh, freedom. Freedom. Getting up every day and being free to make choices. People say that, I don't want to be rich. I don't know why, because people who are rich have freedom. They have a lot of freedom that we don't have as, working class people. But the freedom to be who I am, the freedom to make choices. I'm going to just tell you. Okay. All right. We're talking about this. All right. I said it. Today, I stayed home. Okay. I had an asthma attack early this morning, and I have to take care of myself. I just do. So when one of my asthma attack, you know, and I took my medicine for my asthma, you know, I just watched a bunch of Disney Plus movies and it was fun. And I loved it. And that's why I'm here with you, smiling. But I didn't have to go to work today. I didn't have to go to work today because I was not feeling well. But after I was feeling better, I was like, well, now I'm back. I could have sat there in the bed all day and been like, I'm just going to go ahead and reschedule this meeting because I'm not at my best. No,
right.
I programmed myself to believe that if I feel better and I look better, then I will eventually feel better. Now it's like, yeah, let's go ahead and continue the day. So I am a person.
You've got it in balance. I do.
And that's what I teach. You know, that's my motto. You know, I bring them out of burnout and back to a balanced life because my life is now balanced. And you know it's balanced when that phone goes off and I don't have to look at it anymore. I don't even look at it. I don't even look at it. And it's like, whatever. And nothing has happened. The world has not stopped spinning.
Yeah.
I haven't lost my job. I haven't been written up. Nothing, because I wait until Monday morning to look at that phone to see what it is that I didn't do or need to do. Okay, well, yeah, I missed that deadline. Okay, I'll be all right. Because they love to give you deadlines after work is over.
Love it. So yeah, we put all these pressures, people put all the pressures on themselves. So for the listeners, so there's anybody out there that is thinking, I think I need that workshop. So can you share exactly what you do and how you help and how they can get in touch?
Sure. If you get on my Facebook page, if you get on my private group, you will know when the workshops are coming. We just finished one and they're about every 3 or 4 months. I don't do one once a month. We do them about every 3 months because they're very intense. They're 3 days with me and it's very private and very personal. And I was trained by someone who was trained by Tony Robbins. So just imagine. And all of this energy you see, it comes to the workshop with you. And all this in-your-face talk, it comes through the workshop. So it's very intense. So we just had one in January. So now we're going to have another one probably at the end of April because that's going to be the end of Ramadan here. And then Ramadan is at the end of Ramadan, there's Eid. And so Eid is perfect because teachers are already off work. So we're probably going to have another one at the end of April. So if you get in contact with me, though, and get on my mailing list, get the newsletters, get on my Facebook group, get a copy of the book, get an email from me. You can get emails from me on a regular about when we do those workshops, because now it's just by invitation only almost, because it's not for everyone. Okay. My brand is not for everyone. Some teachers are very happy.
Cool. So, well, to the listeners who can't see any of, so we've got everything down here so people can click on your links. But if anybody's just listening to this, what is your Facebook group and how do they get hold of you?
Oh, Teacher of the Year, the name of the book. Is the Teacher of the Year. The name of my Facebook group is Teacher of the Year. The name of my Instagram, Teacher of the Year 13, because there's a couple of them out there. So Teacher of the Year 13, and then the Facebook group, Teacher of the Year. If you Google it, you'll see the copy of the book as the icon. And it's a small group for now, but it's people that I talk to on a monthly basis. I check in with them. And then there's people that I have coached, and there's people that just do the group classes. Because not, again, everybody needs me on different levels. So I try to provide myself, I spread myself around a little bit, but I have coaches that work with me. People that coach the people that need me, that need my services, and they need something else like career coaching or time management or financial coaching. I'm not an expert at everything, but I know people that are. So I refer them.
There you go. Love it. So yeah, www.iamkendria.com.
Yeah, my website, www.iamkendria.com, has all of that information on it, has my email address, has even my phone number on there. You will be calling United Arab Emirates, but you can go ahead and call me or WhatsApp me from there.
Not and I'm easy on to the get weekend. A hold of.
You can. It'll just sit there till Monday. Go ahead and send it. Just send it. It'll just sit there till Monday.
Perfect. Yeah. And you're a speaker as well, so so what are you doing with that? What have you got planned?
Oh gosh, I've done 8 summits. I'm like literally doing like 2 summits a month, and I have one in that's coming up in 2 weeks. I'm speaking in Paris, still working on Spain, but I'll be speaking in Paris about, you know, the importance of self-care. Self-care is healthcare. I think it's going to be my topic. The importance of self-care. So I don't always show up as a teacher coach. I just sometimes show up as a speaker and I tell my story. A lot of people respond to my story very, very much. Well, you know, as far as me being my background and how I got here. So I tell my story on stages and I sell, you know, books that way. And then people, they contact me, but they don't contact me about coaching. They contact me about how do I get that light that you have? Well, you have to sign up for coaching. You're going to have to sign up because that's a loaded question. How do you answer that?
Yeah.
Your smile. How do you get that? I'm like, pain. Lots and lots of pain. Lots of tears. Lots of pain. Lots of regrets. Lots of no's. And then you can get where I am because everybody wants the solution. But people don't want to work. They don't want to work for it. And I teach them how to do that.
And that's that what you've just said there, I think really is key, is that quite often there's just this resistance to the change. It doesn't matter what the change could be. The change could be something really simple that's done just consistently every day. But it's change. Everybody sort of, it's all down to our programming, isn't it? We've been conditioned to want a pill to fix that, or there's got to be one thing that's going to sort that. And nobody wants to do anything differently.
No,
but they want a different result, sign of a madman.
has that happened for you? And anybody, every person you ask, has that ever happened for you? You want something really bad and it just comes to you like that? No, it's always some kind of struggle that goes along with it, some kind of resistance, something negative happens that stops you. And my life is absolutely no different. And so for me to even sit here and smile about it is an accomplishment. When 10 years ago, I was not this person. I was the one going to work every day, putting my head down, doing what they told me to do, because that's what being a good person and a good teacher and a good mother meant. And I was like, to heck with that.
You were miserable.
Miserable.
Yeah.
I'd much rather be where I am now. I am not the best teacher in that school. I'm just the one they come to because I have the most skill about going to doing different things. And I don't give them any flack about doing the things that that they want me to do between 8 and 2. But after 2 o'clock, please don't call me to do anything else. Not doing anything else.
I love it. But there you go. I mean, that's proof in itself is, you wouldn't be here without your coach. You know, you've learned from your coach. Everybody seems to want the answers for free, for starters. And it's like, look, if you want to learn how I've got here, well, I got a coach. Now you need a coach. We all need a coach, right? Everybody needs a coach.
Right.
I don't know why we've sort of, again, and I think, I don't know whether it's, I can only speak from a woman's perspective, I suppose, is the fact that, again, it's almost like it's very few people want to speak up and admit that they need help.
Yeah. I guess that's where it is. I guess, and I don't know where that comes from. If they think it's a sign of weakness to say,
yes,
well, I got, kids and I have, a husband and I have a great job. How dare I complain about it? But you can. You do have a right to say something is not right and this is not enough. It's not bringing me the joy I thought it would bring me. Even being a mother, it's not always great. I remember being a single mother and it was difficult. There was one, she turned out okay, of course. She works for NASA, so she's okay. But there were days in there where I was like, what did I do to deserve this child? It's like, I remember I had a girl. So just imagine she's another version of me. We used to fight all the time. And I was like, what did I do to get this child? I was a good student. I was a good person. What did I get? And I'm like, we need to break up. Me and you need to break up. I told my daughter that several times. We need to break up. We need to see other people. This is not working. But then you get to a point, now we're best friends. We talk all the time. We talk every day, da, 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 da. But it's a process. It's a process. And so what the people I'm meeting from all walks, is not just teachers, now it's superintendents, principals, it's can you come to my school and just do a workshop? All of that is I teach the struggle. I go straight for the struggle because we got to figure out what peels back the layers. Because again, if you go all the way back to my original story, I was a people pleaser. I wanted people to like me. I wanted to do everything. I was, yes, I will do all of it. Just as long as you like me. And I wanted a good review on my evaluation. And I wanted my students to like me. And none of it was fruitful. All of it hurt me. All of it. Everything about it was hurting me. It was hurting me on the inside. Because when they don't like you, what do you do? When the child still calls you the B word, what do you do? When you still get a bad review, what do you do? If I've done everything right, though, I did everything you told me. And I go home, just devastated behind someone else's opinion of me. The only opinion that matters is me. That's the only one. At the end of the day, the only thing that matters is if I can look myself in the mirror and say, you did that, girl. High five you. You did that.
On
every evaluation, every single year, I have no idea what they write. I could care less. I take myself out.
It's irrelevant.
I take myself out for a drink. I did it. I made it through another year. Yay me. So at
there
the end
you
of
go.
My book,
so people need to take ownership, mm-hmm. take ownership, be strong in themselves. And I love it. Just say no. So thank you so much for your time today. Will you enjoy the rest of your, coming into evening? Then you've had your morning off. So enjoy. Thank you so much for your time, guys. If you want to get in touch, please get in touch. Otherwise, I will be back tomorrow with a Coffee with Karen. Bye for now.
Coffee with Karen podcast, a weekly chat show discussing everything from holistic health to current affairs from a mental, physical, and spiritual perspective. Get your weekly cup of positivity with a sprinkle.